Hey everyone, thank you so much for joining us. It's just about 5 o'clock here in California, and so it's time for us to begin our first Thursday of the month, World Peace Meditation. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and it is July 7th, Thursday, July 7th, 2022. And I'm delighted to be able to be with you here on this beautiful day in such a time we have on planet Earth right now. So it looks like people are coming in, and I'll go ahead and just admit folks for a couple of minutes here. So it's great to see you all. Some of you have your cameras on. Hi, Suzanne. I can see you. And Susan Datry and a few others. And it's fine not to have your cameras on. This is more of a meditative experience. But we will, usually at the end, happy to take questions or comments you may have. So, I'll go ahead. I mean, we can go ahead and start, I think. I can let people in as we begin. So the basic format, I'd like to just lead a guided meditation. We're in California at our home here, working in the garden, and I'm at the piano. So I'm hoping that the piano should be working. Is that working? I guess it should be. I had to change the settings before, but I think it should be back. So, all right. So the foundation, really, of... I think of a life that can lead us to harmony and to be a positive force in the world is the inner work. And one of the main things for inner work is quieting the mind, which is, as they say, like a monkey in many ways. It wants to run around and examine everything. But if we can take time regularly to look within, look more deeply, then we can, I think, begin to understand ourselves better. And when that happens, then we can, I think, instead of reacting to what's happening around us, we can be more proactive and be part of the solution more easily to the problems that are facing us. So we'll talk about that maybe afterwards, but I'd like to go ahead and start the meditation. So let's go ahead and begin. I'll go ahead and get everything ready for that. So feel free to leave your either cameras on or off, however you'd like, but we'll be doing our meditation now. And then afterwards I'll read probably a short reading from the Dhammapada and then open it up for any questions or discussion you all may have. All right, so here we go. Thank you. Abiding in the truth that we are. Connecting with our breathing, allowing our breath to slow down, become quiet. Exhalation, we let go into this present moment. The heart of our life is always in this moment. In this moment, we are free. From fear and anxiety, free from delusion, abiding in our true home, abiding in this moment of awareness. Give thanks for this moment, for our awareness, for everything that has ever happened in our life. It has all brought us to this moment, which is good. Here we are. We give thanks for the beauty of the being that we are. It shines into the world, for the unique gifts and talents and abilities and capacities that we embody in this life. And we give thanks for all of the teachers of the world that help to awaken humanity to our indwelling wisdom. Based in the understanding of the infinite interconnectedness of all expressions of life, abiding in the awareness that there is one life living through all of us, living through all expressions of life. And that we are all on a journey, an adventure of discovery and awakening. Each other's teachers. We are each other's inspiration and example. We give thanks for our friends. We give thanks for our parents, our mother, our father, all of our ancestors, tremendous efforts that they made to fulfill their understanding of co-creating a better world for them and their children. And we give thanks for this beautiful earth, for us, all life here, the waters and the oceans and rivers, the lakes and streams, and the clouds, the ice caps, under the ground and the aquifers, all the life. Abiding in the waters, the tremendous power of water, the wisdom of water, the consciousness of water, what we are in our physical bodies, water. Conditioned illusions that bind the mind into ignorance, misunderstanding. And we open now to the inner wisdom that is shining always in our heart, that connects us with all these elements of light. Just allow music to help deepen our connection with our purpose. We have a reason for this lifetime. And every day we reconnect. In this moment we reconnect again with our purpose. Deepen our understanding of how we can best unfold the embodiment of the being that we are on this earth and contribute our unique gifts. So we deeper into our hearts, to the core of our true home. Exhalation, breathing together, radiating love and kindness to all living beings. May all beings be happy and at peace and free. This radiating a feeling of benevolence and goodwill to the infinite web of relations, excluding no one. Especially to the unique and beautiful being that we are in this life. And now with every exhalation we inhale and Center of our being. And so now we just allow the this joy to radiate in all directions, filling the whole world with the truth, infinite joy. See the whole earth bathed in joy and the truth. Beyond the illusions of fear and conflict, there is great joy. And finally, we connect with the peace and harmony that come naturally when heart is filled with love and compassion and with joy. We are at peace. And so we just radiate peace and harmony to all of our friends and loved ones and neighbors and to the whole human family, the whole web of life. All the ecosystems, all the dimensions of a being and existence, and we see the whole earth bathed in the light of peace. We again give thanks for each other, for this community, and for all of our loved ones, for all the others on this earth right now who are hearing the same call for spiritual awakening, for cultural healing, for vegan living and compassion for all life, for ahimsa, giving birth to the new species, Homo ahimsa, our true nature fulfilled. Thanks, knowing this is so. Thank you, everyone, again, for taking time out of your, I know, very busy lives that we all have to remember the deeper dimensions of our situation, of ourselves, and our predicament that we seem to be in on this earth right now. And it's how we respond. I think that's really the key thing. We can't change the outer world necessarily. We can certainly be an example and do our best to radiate love and truth and awareness. And how we respond to what we see arising around us and in our lives and the situations that we're born into. As I talk about in the World Peace Diet, animal agriculture has been going on already here for 10,000 years. So it already has a huge momentum, and we're all born into a system that commodifies life, turns beings into objects that are bought and sold by the pound, and that, in many ways, desensitizes everyone, all of us, from infancy, so that we harden our gaze and look at others as instruments to be used. So it's quite a work to free ourselves on level after level after level after level from this, and then to be able to be effective in our advocacy and to be able to be effective in helping others to also free their consciousness from the programming of animal agriculture, of the dualistic sense of separation and manipulation of each other to get what we want and to keep away what we don't want. So it's really mainly an inside job. It's an inner work. And I think one of the great things that we're learning in the vegan movement as time goes on is that we're more and more, I think, understanding this, that if we're fighting against other people, we're contributing the energy of fighting. So the whole idea is to find ways to understand how our consciousness in many ways creates the outer appearance of the world around us, and to have a bigger picture. One of the things that we don't seem to talk about in our society at all, hardly, it seems like, which is talked about more in other societies, I think, historically, and maybe even other parts of the world, that this life is one of more than one. It's not the only one. And to keep that perspective, and that we are not the body, we're what's activating and vivifying this physical form. My old Zen teacher used to lead a meditation. He called it the artichoke process. You know, an artichoke has these layers, and maybe I'll do it one of these times. But the basic idea is you start out by letting go of different layers. The outer layer of all the things that we own, that we really couldn't live without, you know, our jewelry or our computer or our telephone or our house, our refrigerator. And then you just keep going and letting go of more and more layers. And pretty soon we get down to the layers of our political beliefs or our relationships and all these things that we have really grown more and more to identify and that define us, really, in this world, in our life, in our story, you know, our story itself, the story of me and my name. And you get right down to the core. What is it? What is it, actually? The body, the name, the form, the story that is going in my mind all the time about my life and what I'm doing. And what are we, actually? That's really what it boils down to, ultimately, is the great question. And to not give up and not sell ourselves short on that question, to find if we can penetrate more, ever more deeply into that question. It's enormously liberating when we realize that we're not what we're told we are in our society. And that's the main point. I just want to emphasize that since we live in a society that's organized at its core around materialism, around reducing beings to matter and selling them by the pound, then we're all taught from the time we're little infants that everything is essentially matter, that everything is essentially meaningless. There was a big bang, and for some reason consciousness randomly emerged out of a meaningless universe. I mean, the story is so toxic, and if you want to completely just enslave people, that's what you tell them. And so they have no way of making meaning except by consuming and accumulating and dominating and struggling. So religion is crushed. And a new religion, a new pseudo-religion is given, scientism, which is based on the idea of competition and might makes right and survival of the fittest, all of these lies that reduce nature to a struggle of the weak and the strong. And the whole thing, it's all based on animal agriculture. And so we've been born into the most materialistic society in the history of the world, and we can see where it's leading. So it's really up to us, I think, those who are awakening out of this delusion, to remind each other and to remind ourselves of the underlying truth of spirituality, of the fact that there's one life. And when we understand that, when we can actually get a glimpse of that, when our mind gets quiet enough, that's really what it takes. As long as our mind isn't quiet, we're running our story, and that keeps everything in place. And that story has been injected into us by our society, for the most part, by all the ads and the programming, the educational system. So that's the thing, that story. It's like I talk about the idea of the Trojan horse, you know, that animal agriculture is a Trojan horse. It pretends to be our good friend. We get our protein, we get our calcium. It's this wonderful thing. God gave us these animals to eat. Thank you, God, for giving us cows and pigs and chickens. They're so delicious. Bacon, yum, yum, yum. You know, it's a Trojan horse. There's nothing about it that doesn't destroy our world and us and them and everything, not only physically but mentally and spiritually. And we have these other Trojan horses, really, that which are worse than animal agriculture. It's the attitudes that animal agriculture requires of us to see other beings as objects. And after 10,000 years of practice, here we are, where even the religions have become materialistic for the most part. And the new religions are reducing us to robots in many ways. So veganism, properly understood, is questioning all of this at the deepest, most fundamental level. And it's not even veganism anymore. It's not. It's ahimsa, maybe is a good word. I love that. Which is loving kindness and inclusiveness and getting outside of the prison of being a fundamentally separate self locked into the narrative of our society. So that's the beautiful thing. And what I really love is how so many, really virtually all, I think, of the major religious traditions, not only the world religions, but I think virtually all the indigenous traditions, they're always reminding us that there's more to life than just the material level. And once we begin to get a feeling for that, and we quiet our mind, so we have a glimpse of the being that's not just this form, and this collection of stories and memories and emotions and thoughts that we identify with a little me attached to everything. So that's really the key. And in a sense, it's like learning any art or ability. It's just practice. You know, by practicing, we learn. Whatever it is, like if we want to play an instrument or do an art or develop an athletic skill or learn a language, we have to put in hundreds or thousands of hours, right, of actual work, actually practicing. You can't just learn French by just always speaking French. We have to actually get out the books and learn it and practice and talk and so forth. Same thing with anything. Same thing with our mind, our meditation practice. So like in Japan, they have this idea of the three nens. I think this is a really good, important thing. Three nens are... A nen is a word, it's kind of hard to translate into English, but it's like thought, maybe the word thought. So we have the first nen, the second, and the third. So the basic idea is that the normal human being is going around in the third nen, right? The third nen is what we think about what's happening, right? So we have, so the first nen is just contact, right? We see, we look out the window, we see the mountain, we see whatever, you know, we're seeing, we're hearing, we're tasting. So we have the six, the five senses, right? We're aware. That's the first nen, that instant, aha, just seeing. The second nen is instantaneously right there, which, and it's saying, me. I see this. I see that. I, you know, so this is, the second nen is a sense of me doing all this. So these are very, very subtle. The third nen is the story that weaves it all together. So, oh, I see the mountain. Oh, I don't like the way that looks. Or, oh, I hope I can go there. Or, I wish I wouldn't have. So we have, so we're continually in the third nen, basically. We're not just seeing and then having awareness of me, but we have this story about everything. And so we're, so that, with, as the years go by, we learn how to follow that, and that, that takes over. And so the average person, if we haven't done any training in meditation or inner work, we're just in the third nen, and it runs us, right? Something, somebody cuts us off in traffic, or they insult us, or whatever, and we're angry, and we're upset, and they say something nice, and we're happy. I mean, we're just, whatever it is, we're just getting kind of pushed along by our programming, by the cultural conditioning, and that's how they got us, in a sense. Whoever controls the conditioning and the narrative in our society, they start spewing a lot of fear on TV. Everybody's terrified, right? Because the third nen just takes over. So we have to practice getting back to the second nen, if we can, or even better, getting back to the first nen, and just witnessing, just being aware without even a me, you know? And it's not easy. I mean, because our mind is constantly jumping to the third nen. So the whole idea is that we have the power through practice to train the mechanism of attention to be present. And to be present, just practice. That's it. Be aware of our breathing throughout the day. Be aware of what we're seeing. Be aware of our emotions and feelings. Not be reacting all the time and being carried away, but being the space within which this is arising. And when that happens, that's important, because when we leave this body, that's what's going to happen. Right? And most people are afraid of that. They're terrified of dying. Because who will I be? What will I be? I won't be anything. Don't worry. As I always say, you'll never be more dead than you are right now. So don't worry. You can't die. I mean, consciousness is awareness. We're more unconscious now probably than we'll certainly be after we leave this body. So the whole idea is to just try to become more aware, more and more and more aware, and look deeper and deeper, and let the, and thinking is what really dumbs us down in many ways. It's our thoughts that keep us at this relatively low level of vibration. So that's the thing. We're in a society that's in many ways designed, because of animal agriculture and because, you know, there's a few people controlling the media, to keep a relatively low level of vibration. So the more we can question the narratives in society that run in our own mind, I think the better it is for all of us. I'm just noticing there's a note here in the thing. Volume is a bit low. Okay, so maybe I'll turn it up a little bit here. Okay, yeah, maybe if that's any better. So essentially, just make a note if you say something. You can always press *6, by the way, if you want to say something here. So I just wanted to emphasize that. So we have a few. We have a few minutes. Maybe I'll include this short reading from the Dhammapada. We've been doing that the last on and off over the last. We've been doing this now for about 2 years, I think. These first Thursday meditations, and so we're kind of slowly working our way through this book, the Dhammapada. This is a translation by Gil Fronsdale from California here, and this is, it may not go along with it, but I think in a way it does. The chapter 13 is called The World. And the Dhammapada is, if you don't know, it's one of the basic old teachings from the Pali in the Buddhist tradition, the Theravadan tradition. It's pretty basic, but it's got some good points, I think. So this is what it says. Do not follow an inferior way. Don't live with negligence. Do not follow a wrong view. Don't be engrossed in the world. I mean, gosh, there it is, right? Wrong view. I mean, we are born into a massive wrong view in this society, right? We're taught that we're separate, that we have to struggle. I mean, everything about this society, practically, I hate to say it, but it's pretty much wrong view. So we have to find it within ourselves, and then, but the good thing is there are beautiful people, there are beautiful teachings. If we can look at the trees and listen to the streams and the lakes, and you know, it's all around us. It's teaching us the right view. If we can look deeply, it's everywhere. Okay, then the next one. This is great. Rouse yourself. Don't be negligent. Live the Dharma, a life of good conduct. One who lives the Dharma is happy in this world and the next. See, this is the key thing. It's okay to have wrong views, in a way, right? If you have wrong views, what is going to happen is you're going to suffer. You know, that's the basic bottom line. And what's wrong with suffering? I mean, there's nothing wrong with suffering. It's just, it's suffering, right? And you cause others suffering. So if I, you know, I'm born into a society where I'm taught to eat bacon and eggs and cheese and all that. So I do. I have wrong views. And I cause suffering to the animals and to ecosystems, to myself, everybody. And then I meet someone who's a vegan or something, and I get the right view. And so I can stop the suffering to myself and to others, you know, and that's the whole idea. But we have to rouse ourselves. We have to actually take our own mind in our own hand and goose it, you know, like, come on, let's go. And be willing to make an effort to actually question our own narrative. And that's hard to do. A lot of times we get very comfortable. We think, oh, I see myself this way. This is my self-image. This is how I am. So, especially as vegans, we have a tendency to think, well, I'm perfect. You know, I don't have to change anything. I'm vegan. Everybody else is the problem. So, it's really important for us, I think, to every day try to understand that there's lots going on in our mind that is perhaps could be healthier. Our thoughts could be healthier. One of the main sayings in all of the traditions of spiritual healing is to stand porter at the gate of your thoughts. You know, stand porter, right? You stand at your thoughts, you don't let them in, right? You know, sorry, you're not letting you in. I'll let you in. You know, be aware. You know, be aware of thoughts, and then don't cultivate thoughts of jealousy or fear or aggression. I mean, whatever they are, they will manifest in your body and in your world, and they add to the suffering and misery in the world, which, again, isn't bad in the sense that it's the only way we learn, right? We learn from suffering. So, you know, I think one of the great spiritual teachers said that sooner or later, you know, our suffering turns us like weary children to the arms of divine love, right? Sooner or later, we're like, all right, you know, I got to try something else. And I like this, the last line is, one who lives the Dharma is happy. This is the foundation, because when we help others be happy, when we stop causing suffering, when we give up our wrong views, this joy starts to bubble up for no reason. We don't need a reason. It's like, man, life is beautiful. We're happy just to look out, to smile at somebody, whatever it is. In this world and the next, that's an important point. It's not just this world. Whatever we're experiencing in this world is because of what we did in the last world, right? So the whole idea is don't live just for this life. I mean, that's the huge mistake. Okay, then the next one is live the Dharma, a life of good conduct. Remember, Dharma in the Buddhist tradition means the way it is, right? Dharma. There's a word, dharmata. Dharmata means the way the universe is, the principles of the universe, right? There's certain principles that it's the way it is, like cause and effect, for example. And so if we want to go against that, if we want to go against the Dharma, go against the way it is, it's like saying, I'm going to jump out of a window and I just don't believe in gravity. No, we're going to have the effect. So when we understand that, then we are happy in the sense that we're in alignment with the universal principles, the Dharma. And it's also, Dharma means the teaching. the Buddhist teaching. So live the Dharma, a life of good conduct. Don't live a life of bad conduct. One who lives the Dharma is happy in this world and the next. If one sees the world as a bubble, if one sees it as a mirage, one won't be seen by the king of death. That's a very deep one, actually. So what that's pointing at is understanding that this world that we see is a dream. I've said this before. If I'm in a dream, it's real. It's absolutely real. And I know it. I have very vivid dreams, and they're real when I'm having them. But then we wake up, right? It's the same way. This world is a dream. It's real. When we're in it, it's real. But when we have to understand what that actually means, because if we don't, we get sucked in and we lose our ability to actually be effective. So he says here, if one sees it as a mirage, one won't be seen by the king of death. So that's basically that we won't die the way people think they're going to die. There's that old Zen saying, if you die before you die, then when you die, you won't die. Right? You know, that idea that when we put to rest the delusion that manifests in our mind, then when we get to the point where we leave this body, we actually will understand, we won't die in the sense that most people think of it. So that's more we can say, but I'll stop there. Then it goes on, come, look on this world as a beautiful royal chariot. Fools flounder in it, but the discerning do not cling. Isn't that beautiful? It's a beautiful world. It's beautiful. But don't cling to the beauty. In other words, don't grasp after what we want and try to keep away what we don't want. Whoever recovers from doing evil by doing something wholesome illuminates the world like the moon set free from a cloud. Whoever replaces an evil deed with a wholesome one illuminates the world like the moon set free from a cloud. Blind is this world. Few see clearly here. As birds who escape from nets are few, few go to heaven. So that's a basic teaching that, which is, seems to be true, that it's actually quite few who are actually seriously interested in opening their eyes and seeing what's going on. Most people would rather be comfortable with their eyes closed. So, and then he goes on, swans travel the path of the sun. Those with psychic powers travel through space. The wise travel forth from the world, having conquered Mara and his army. So that's another interesting thing. So, you know, Mara. I mean, it's interesting. You know, Mara is the devil, in a sense. And what the heck is that? You know, I mean, that's another whole long conversation. But the basic idea here in Buddhism, and I think in most of the world religions, is that there are forces of deception. There are forces of deception. And if we're not aware, we will be deceived. And when we're deceived, then we have wrong views and then we suffer. So the wise travels forth from the world, and that means, doesn't mean you actually, you know, you leave the world physically, but the idea is we're no longer, well, it's like the Bible says, of the world. We're not defining our success and happiness by what happens in the world. That's a recipe for suffering. For people who speak falsely, who transgress in this one way, and who reject the world beyond, there is no evil they won't do. Fools don't praise generosity. Misers don't go to the world of gods. The wise rejoice in generosity and so find happiness in the hereafter. Absolute rule over the earth, going to heaven, supreme sovereignty over all worlds. The fruit of stream entry surpasses them all. And that's the end. So this last couple of ones here, he's talking about spiritual practice and entering a, and entering the stream basically is a metaphor for discovering your true nature, leaving the world of delusion and entering the stream that leads to enlightenment. And so what he's saying is that that is far beyond being king of the entire world, right? It's far beyond any of those things. It's superior. And then the idea here also is that misers don't go to the world of gods, and those who are rejoice in generosity will find happiness in the hereafter. So there's this whole idea, and again, in many traditions, that the experience we have after this life is in many ways conditioned by how we're acting now. And so there's, in like for example, in Buddhism, there's the idea of the six realms, and it's one of the main ideas is that if we're miserly, then we're reborn in the hungry ghost realm, right? So the hungry, you know, it's one of the six realms. It's one of the three lower realms. And so the hungry ghosts, you have to have compassion for them because they were very miserly in their former life. And so now they have these bodies that are always hungry, and they can never get enough to eat. So they're these hungry ghosts. They're just hungry all the time, and they can't get enough. So the whole idea is when we're generous, when we give, we will have a better birth in the next realm. But the whole idea in Buddhism, of course, is don't just stop there. You don't want to be born in the land, in the realm of the gods, because sooner or later you're going to leave there too, and you might end up as a hungry ghost again, or another realm. So the idea is to awaken out of the whole illusion of separate selfhood, of being a thing, an object that was born and will die. So the idea is to really, again, go deeper with our understanding of our true nature. And out of that, I think, we begin to become more effective in our lives, in our advocacy. It's just in general. We don't get so easily upset by what's happening and so afraid of what's going on, because we see that we see the bigger picture. And I think that's hard to really come by without study, you know, studying these teachings and then putting them into practice through meditation and listening, inner listening, and then perhaps also in our relationships, actually practicing it in daily life. So that's all I want to... Oh my gosh, I can't believe how late it is. So we have a couple of minutes. Does anyone have a question about anything I've been saying here? Today, the time kind of flew by somehow, but thank you all for your kind attention and for all the efforts that you're making. Feel free, if anyone has a question, I can go a minute or two over. We really try not to go more than an hour because I want to respect everybody's time. But I didn't leave enough time for questions. So does anyone have a question or comment? If not, that's good too. Isabel, okay?
Yeah, I have a question. Yeah, it's me. So, as I mentioned to you, I went to a retreat in Manchester, and I did a vegan keto. That's my first time. So I tried to see what it's all about. And I found myself, you know, eating a lot of fat, and it was hard to digest. Some dishes were very good, but you eat them. And I felt like before I was vegan, when in France, I was eating duck confit with potato cooked in the grease of the animal. It's very good, but then afterwards very heavy. And I had that experience too there. So it was good, but not pleasant. But, you know, what I found out is the cook were so excited about, you know, preparing raw vegan and a little bit of cook, you know, but with no grains. It was like, you know, almond flour and all that. I found out they were not vegan, you know, and I thought, wow, that's kind of weird. It says raw, you know, vegan keto. And, you know, I found those are not vegan. And I kind of asked, you know, why, you know. One was doing bodybuilding, and she said she needed more protein, and she felt like, so she was a little bit of an animal protein, and started with fish, then it went to chicken, then it went to turkey. You know, it's pretty much everything. It's like, okay, we're very far away from being vegan. And the other one, she said, when I feel like I'm vegging out, you know, I have too many vegetables, you know, I'm eating meat. And I'm like, wow. And so I didn't know how to interact with them, you know. And the leader of a workshop says, well, everybody has different needs, you know, so we need to be respectful. And I was like, okay, so I just have to shut up, you know. I didn't know how to I didn't feel like it was my tribe first because there were a few people were vegan, but a lot of them were not.
Right.
And I don't know how to respond to that. Say, oh, you have to respect their choices, you know, not be judgmental. So how do you?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. And I'll just, you know, say a couple of things. From my experience in veganism, there's many different types of veganism. Some people are very low fat, right? I mean, like McDougall and Ornish and Esselstyn and Gregor, all these people, they say really low, low, low fat. And I think that's a good idea for the most part, especially for people who have heart problems and so forth. But Madeline and I, we really think that Dr. John McDougall's approach, which is totally vegan, but also based around starches, you know, around complex carbohydrates, basically not white flour, but you know, whole grains and squashes, potatoes, sweet potatoes, and beans. That really gives you the energy that you need to thrive, because our bodies really burn carbohydrates, right? The carbohydrates burn clean to carbon dioxide and water, so it's very clean burning fuel. As soon as you get fat, you've got problems with your circulatory system because we're not designed to eat a lot of fat, so it starts clogging things up. Yeah. And so I think, you know, the idea of keto vegan to me is already—it's an oxymoron in many ways. I mean, I'm not sure what they were trying to prove with that whole thing, but in terms of your question of how to respond, I think it's for me. It's over the years I've learned it's not so much what we say; it's how we say it. You know, and it's who we are when we're saying it. So, the best thing I think, as a rule of thumb, is instead of in any way questioning them, criticizing them, that kind of thing, just speak your own truth. It's like you tell your own story in the whole thing. Like, I'm so glad, I always, I kind of emphasize it, I'm so glad I discovered that I get all the nutrients I need from plant-based foods. I don't need any animal foods. And I have friends who are successful bodybuilders, or I know people who are successful bodybuilders without using animal protein, and just leave it at that. Just say, this is my experience. This is what I know, and just plant the seed without trying to win the argument or try to be right. Because as soon as I do that, as soon as I go into trying to make them wrong and I'm right and you're wrong, they have every reason to fight back. And the thing is, 98% of the people in our society are on their side. You know, they're eating animal foods, and it's in the anywhere people go, they see all the evidence. For the most part, you see ads and billboards and so forth. So I think planting seeds and being an example with love and respect for people is really the best way, but doing it in our own unique way. I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all. And there may be times, I would say, when it's appropriate to be a little more edgy about it. And maybe times when it's better to be less. You got to use your intuition. I don't think we can say there's a one size fits all in every situation. Sometimes it may be good to shake people up a little bit. You know, like Emerson said, people long to be settled. There's no hope for them unless they're unsettled. And so we as vegans, our job in many ways is to unsettle people. Yeah. The whole idea is that we can unsettle them unskillfully by just making them upset and thinking we're jerks. Or we can unsettle them skillfully, which I think is more telling our story and planting a seed of how happy we are. So it's really important to stay positive and just be grateful and talk about how happy and grateful we are that we discovered this. That the only reason I was eating meat and dairy all those years was I was just following orders. You know, I thought that's what everybody said. I got to have protein to get enough to be a good weightlifter or whatever it is. And then I realized, actually, that's not in my best interest, not in the best interest of animals either. And so I'm so glad I figured that out, and then let go. Don't try to change them.
Right.
That's the irony. So when we try to change people, they just fight back and don't change. And if we can basically plant a seed without trying to change them, they just, lo and behold, they move in that direction. But it's the irony. If we try to make people change, very often they sense it intuitively. So we want them to change. I know we do. I mean, we want to protect animals. We want to defend the earth. We want them to be, you know, all those reasons. And yet people are already so programmed. So at least, you know, you were able to be an example and you were able to be a presence. And so that's already fantastic. You know, I think that's great. And then the more we can just radiate the sense of health and happiness and inner peace and tell our story around that, I think that's a great way to do it. But again, I think every situation is unique. So you may find yourself being called to be more strong maybe. And then the thing is, well, then they'll say, sometimes they'll say, oh, that wasn't very good. You know, I'm not going to go along. But you never know. I mean, I've had experiences where people argued back, and I thought I really lost, you know, in a sense. But then later they went vegan anyway. So, so the most important thing is to plant a seed somehow. If you can, just plant a seed.
Yeah.
But I think it's better to try to do it without our ego getting involved in like tangling our horns with their horns, if possible.
Sure.
And just shining the light in a way that they don't feel personally judged. And the best way usually to do that is to tell our own story, just talk about my, you know, what I discovered. And again, that idea of we're all just following orders. And nobody wants to just be someone who's just following orders, you know, but that's all. Because anyone who's eating animal foods, that's why they're doing it. They're just doing what they've been told. And once we realize, you know, these mandates aren't in our best interest, right? It's not, don't follow the mandate. You know, it's a cultural mandate. Everybody's supposed to do it. Well, maybe it's making us sick. Maybe it's destroying everything.
Well, some of them, they do feel like they're following their own, you know, guidance because they tried to be vegan, maybe raw vegan or whatever vegan, and that didn't help them. You know, that didn't suit them. They don't have as much energy. They can't lift as much weight. Oh, but if you eat chicken, it's much better. So they feel like they're following their own guidance.
Right, yeah. You know, it needs, you know, that's always the hardest thing. People who said, well, I tried being a vegan, it didn't work for me, I must be type O, or I need more protein. So the whole idea is, you know, if you can engage them in a conversation where you don't, again, use I statements, right? I realized, actually, that there's a tremendous power in the way we think about food, right? I mean, I, you know, if you have any situations in your own life about that and how the placebo effect, right? The mind over, you know, this really has a huge impact. If it's foods that I think are, or anything I think is going to be not good, but then I, you know, the mind will invest a lot of power into that. And just kind of talk about that. And, of course, if you can get them to say, well, what were they actually eating when they were vegan? You know, I mean, a lot of times really lousy. It's not a healthy vegan diet. A lot of times they weren't even totally vegan. I mean, I found that out when I'm really talking. If they're willing to open up, okay, what were you actually eating? And but they won't. If you're in an argument with them, it doesn't work that well. But if you can be on the same side, you know, if they really don't want to change, you know, you can just plant the seed. But I think if you go into it more deeply, the truth is we have the truth on our side. People do not need to eat animal foods to be healthy and strong. So we don't have, it's not like everybody has like a different physiology. We all have the basic same physiology. And so when people say, well, I'm just one of those people that has to have that, there's different approaches you can take. There's like, you know, people in the South, you know, said, well, you know, we just have to have slavery. You know, we couldn't survive without slavery. You know, you got to have it. You guys in the North, you don't have to have it because you don't have cotton. You know, we got cotton down here. We got to have slavery. You know, leave us alone. And so, well, all right. You know, but the idea is, that, you know, they don't have slavery and they're, you know, surviving now. So the idea is to plant seeds as best you can creatively to help them question their story that's being used to justify violence. And again, there's lots of things we can draw from, but if people, you know, they have that story, they're kind of stuck in that story. So if they're really happy with that, then the best thing we can do is to just try to plant a seed to help them question that. Mm-hmm. And I think our own example is the best way to do that. Because I think at a deep level, people know they don't want to be eating suffering and misery and terror and violence. And that's absolutely unavoidable if you're eating animal foods and causing it. So the more you can kind of keep planting that seed relentlessly, that's what they're eating.
Well, some people are telling themselves stories, you know, well, the animals are put down very quickly, they don't feel anything. This whole story of denying, you know.
Yeah, then you got to tell them some truth, give them some truth. But Madeline is shaking her arms here, so I have to go.
Sure. Sorry, I'm taking all the time.
Sorry, I went a little bit too long. But, yeah, you know, you got to tell the story of, the undercover people that go into these slaughterhouse, supposed, you know, the small health-friendly slaughterhouses for grass-fed free-range animals and how the animals are literally tortured to death. I mean, you know, you got to tell them what's going on because it's not going to be in the mainstream media.
Right. If they're willing to take all the time for other people have questions.
Pardon me?
I didn't want to take all the time for questions, so.
Yeah. No, it's okay. But I want to thank everyone. Let's keep our consciousness connected with the truth that we are, and knowing that, yeah, when we're in this world, there's going to be all kinds of challenges that we face. And I look forward, those of you who are in the World Peace Diet circle or training, we have a third Thursday call coming up in 2 weeks. So please join us, obviously, for that. And maybe we can close with our prayer that we say. It's from inspired by our circle of compassion. You can feel free to unmute your microphones if you would like to do so we can all hear each other for this. And Madeline's going to join us here. Here she is.
Yay.
Madeline.
All right. So let's say it together. We do it three times.
Compassion
circles the earth for all beings everywhere. Again, compassion circles the earth
for all beings everywhere.
One more.
Compassion circles the earth for all beings everywhere.
Thank you so much, you beautiful people, for shining your light. Go forth and multiply the message, and we'll see you again soon. Thank you very much. Much love.
Good night. Thank you, Will.
Good night.
Thank you, Madeline.
Thank you, lovely everybody.
Glad the dog was chiming in.
Nice to see you, Judy.
Alrighty.
Yeah, everybody.
Same here.